Blog Talk Radio.
Hi, everybody. This is Silvio Canto in Dallas, Texas on Wednesday, August the 3rd, and welcome to our commentary. Today, we're going to talk about a couple of topics. The passing of Vince Scully, and we're going to talk about what happened in Kansas with their abortion amendment that they were trying to put in the Constitution. We're also going to get into a few other topics. I do want to begin by wishing Tony Bennett. Now, you've heard about Tony Bennett. You know, I left my heart in San Francisco. He's been, you know, a recording star for a very long time. Well, he's 97 today, 97. So we got to wish Tony Bennett a happy number 97. It's been a long time since I've heard any of his songs. But when you turn 97 on this blog, whenever anybody goes over 90, we salute them. That's a great, it's a great thing to live into your 90s. And in this case, 97. What an amazing life that has been. Let me begin with another amazing life, and that's the life of Vince Scully. Now, if you're a baseball fan, I don't have to tell you who he is. Even if you're not a baseball fan, though, I think this is an amazing life that should be remembered for being an amazing life. Vince Scully, if you're a baseball fan, you know, he was the voice of the Dodgers. He was the man who did their games on the radio, their games on television. If you're a Dodgers fan, you know, Vince Scully was the constant. He was the constant denominator, whatever the word is. I mean, he started with the Dodgers in the 1950s in Brooklyn and then went to L.A. with him. He became more famous in L.A. than he was in Brooklyn. He was a young man in Brooklyn getting started. But when the team moved to L.A., that's when Vince Scully really took over and became the voice of the Dodgers. But the reason I admire him, aside from the fact that he was a tremendous, I mean, as far as calling a baseball game, he was one of the best, if not the best. But the reason that I admire him is for something else. And that is that over 67 years, from 1958, I believe, or 57, to 2016, he did his job perfectly every single time. Just imagine that. For 67 years, you do your job every single day, and you're always at your very best. Not a day off. Every single day, you do your job. If you know anything about baseball, you play 162 games. So he was behind the microphone for each and every one of those games. And he was always at his best. You know, if you would listen to Vin Scully in April, or you would listen to Vin Scully in July, or you would listen to Vin Scully in October, or if you were listening to the games when the Dodgers were in first place, or when the Dodgers were not competing for first place, any game that you watched or listened to that Vin Scully was calling was as professional as they get. He was really the standard. Now, there have been others. There have been others, you know, very good announcers over the years as well, Red Barber. Here in Dallas, we had a great one, Mark Holtz, who used to do the Rangers. But of course, when you're the Dodgers announcer, you're going to be in the middle of more things. I always said that Mark Holtz with the Rangers was a great announcer, but unfortunately, he was with the Rangers when the Rangers were not winning anything back in the 70s, 80s, and in fact, he died right before the Rangers became a competitive team. But he was a great announcer too. Chuck Thompson, who used to do the Orioles in Baltimore as well as the Colts, the football team, when they were in Baltimore, he was a great announcer too. In fact, I think Vince Scully and Chuck Thompson were similar in the sense that they could speak the language very well, and they had that very elegant voice when they were speaking. But every time that I would hear Vince Scully, every time that I had the opportunity to catch a game that he was doing, and most of the time it was in the postseason because I didn't live in L.A., so I didn't get to see the daily performances. So he would do postseason baseball. And every time that I would hear him doing a game on the radio or on television, I would always say to myself, Vince Scully must have gotten a 100 from his English teacher every single time because he had a great command of the language, great vocabulary. He also spoke correctly. You know, sometimes the people who do baseball games or the people who do football games are not exactly always grammatically correct, if you know what I mean. But Vince Scully, I mean, he was grammatically correct every time. He was amazing how well he spoke. and all of that. So I, as a baseball fan, remember him, but I also remember him for his professionalism, the fact that this guy was doing his job 67 years every single day. He was at his best. He never complained. He was out there every single day calling the pitches. And, you know, a baseball game is a little different than another sport because there is obviously, you know, the pace of the game is a little different. So you have to have stories, you know, between the pitches sometimes or the pitching changes or whatever. And Scully was amazing at that. He was just fabulous. He knew exactly what to say. And very often, if you were listening to one of his games, you know, you were listening, let's say, in the fourth inning, and then he would begin a story, and you would hang in there because the story would end in the seventh inning, and between the stories was the baseball game. So he was just absolutely fabulous. He was 94. He was born in New York in 1927, so he's of my father's generation. My father was born in 1926, so he's of that generation. He grew up in New York at a time when New York City had three baseball teams, the Dodgers, the Giants, and the Yankees. And the competition between the fans back in those days was pretty intense, especially between the Dodgers and the Giants. I mean, that was a tough competition back then between those two groups. I mean, you could live in a neighborhood where the neighbor next door to you was a Giants fan, the other neighbor was a Yankee fan, the other neighbor was a Dodgers fan, and obviously these three neighbors from time to time would argue a little baseball. Well, that's the world that he grew up in. And he eventually ended up doing the Dodgers. And as I say, the rest is history. So rest in peace. Rest in peace, Vin Scully. You were one of the very best. And I've got to believe that up there in heaven, there's going to be a pretty good game with Vin Scully and Red Barber calling a baseball game up there. I've got to believe it's going to be a fantastic game up there in heaven. So great, great story, the story of Vin Scully. But remember, if you're not a baseball fan, I understand you may not know much about him, but just think of him as the man who successfully and professionally did his job for 67 years. That's pretty remarkable. I don't care what profession you're in. 67 years of being the very best, man, that takes a lot of work, and that takes a lot of commitment, and that takes a lot of Vince. One of the very best ever. Well, let's talk a little bit about what happened in Kansas. They had a referendum, and the pro-life movement lost. The mistake that was made by the pro-life movement in Kansas was that they went for the complete elimination of abortion. And that's not going to fly. Look, the pro-life movement scored a tremendous victory when Roe v. Wade was overturned. Roe v. Wade was a terrible law, and the effort of many people over the years is what gave us the justices in the Supreme Court who overturned Roe v. Wade. And now the issue goes back to the states, as we just saw in Kansas. But my advice, and this is what I always say to my friends, I'm pro-life. I believe that abortion is wrong, but you got to be realistic in the political arena. And that's why I've often argued that the best pro-life policy is to say we're against abortion, but the state can regulate abortion by leaving a window where a woman can have an abortion. If you close that window altogether, which is what I believe they were doing in Kansas, then you're going to have what happened in Kansas, where you're going to lose. You got to leave the window open, and you got to use as your model for this the Mississippi law that overturned Roe v. Wade, and that's 15 weeks. 15 weeks. You can have an abortion in 15 weeks. After that, you cannot have an abortion. Or you can use the Texas model, which is the heartbeat, meaning you can have an abortion, but not if a heartbeat is detected. But if you close the window 100%, then you're going to run into a lot of people who are going to say, no, a woman should have the right to an abortion in the case of incest or rape or whatever the reason. And that's the mistake that was made in Kansas. So I hope we learned that. We learned that. Because we're winning this. We're winning this. But we just have to know how to fight the battles. And I think in Kansas, unfortunately, we didn't do it correctly. And now, of course, the media is going crazy about what happened in Kansas. They're saying, look, you know, a great loss for pro-life. Well, it was a setback. I wouldn't call it a loss. I think that if we come back with a proposal, I'm pretty sure that we will get abortion restrictions in Kansas, but we got to do it correctly. We simply cannot say all abortion is eliminated, because if we do that, than we have what happened in Kansas. So it's a lesson. It's a lesson. It's not the end of the war. It's not the end of the battle. But it's a setback that I think can teach us all how to fight these wars in the political arena. Not in the church, because obviously we can win this in the church because the people in the church agree with us. But you got to get out to the political arena where you're dealing with people who don't see abortion the same way you and I do. And that's the battle that we have to win. Just a couple of quick things here before we say goodbye. I just saw a story that is really interesting. You know, the government and many people want to turn us into electric car drivers. They have a target of 30% or whatever electric cars by a certain time. I think it's unrealistic, but that's the target they have. But one of the problems we're going to have with electric cars is that the more we drive electric cars, the less gasoline we're going to buy, which means the less gasoline taxes that many states are going to have. And that's the problem, that gasoline taxes make up a very big chunk of the budget of many states. So if all of a sudden people are not driving, fossil fuel automobiles, then they're not buying as much gas, which means that all of those gasoline taxes that go into as revenue from any of the state budgets are not going to be there. So how is that going to be replaced? Well, I guess we're going to have to pay taxes when we charge our car, maybe, or when we buy our car. Well, I don't know how we're going to do it, but we got to replace those taxes. So if 30% of the cars are electric, let's say by whatever year, how are we going to replace all those gasoline taxes? I don't think they've thought this through. I'm not against electric cars. Don't misunderstand. I'm not against it. But I just think we have to think all these things through. You know, the electric car is not this automatic fix for all of our problems. There's other things that we got to take into account. And the money that comes from gasoline taxes, I hope we're ready to replace it, because that's a lot. That is a lot of money. Speaking of oil, you know, we have this thing called the National Reserve. It's kind of like, in case something happens, we have oil, I guess, in case of a war, in case of whatever. And I just learned that, read an article that our reserves are down to 1985 levels, which means we've been taking too much money out of our national oil reserves. And that's a big mistake. It's also a big risk, because if you actually do need to get into a war or whatever, you need those reserves. I mean, we have those reserves for a reason. You know, we're not just collecting gasoline or oil. We have it for a reason. And if we're down to 1985 levels, that's concerning. And why are we down to 1985 levels? Because the Biden administration keeps releasing these barrels of oil to keep the price down. That's very irresponsible. There are better ways of bringing down the price of gasoline without putting your national reserves at issue here. This is very irresponsible on the part of the Biden administration. I have a post over at the American Thinker today about Cuba. You may have heard that there's a shortage of sugar in Cuba. Now that's, you know, for someone like me who knows the history of Cuba and obviously understands Cuba, that's a pretty shocking thing, because sugar and Cuba are almost synonymous. But the reason there's a shortage is because Cuba is a communist country, and these sugar plantations in Cuba for a long time were privately run, and they were super efficient. They were some of the best in the world. But of course, all those plantations and all those sugar mills were taken over by the government, and now they are just an absolute disaster. So Cuba is now producing sugar at levels, you know, that we haven't seen in 40 or 50 years. And of course, that has a terrible impact not only on the diet of Cuban people, but also as an export source, because Cuba exports a lot of sugar. So another example of the failure of communism. So if you really want to see how communism works, just take a look at sugar production in Cuba. A disaster. Everything is a disaster when the communists take over, including the production of sugar in a country known for sugar. I mean, it's incredible, absolutely incredible. Again, happy number 97 to Tony Bennett. I think I'm going to check out that song, I Left My Heart in San Francisco. I have not heard that in a long time. I think I'm going to go to YouTube and check it out. I Left My Heart in San Francisco, Tony Bennett, who's 97 today. Thank you for listening, and we'll talk to you later. This is Silvio Canto in Dallas. My thanks to all the comments coming in. Sally, you're exactly right. Communism does not work. We understand that. You and I understand that, but a lot of people, unfortunately, especially in our universities, are being taught something different. Have a great day, everybody, and we'll talk to you later. This is Silvio Canto in Dallas.